This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And welcome. We've got a really interesting show today. I'm so excited because there was this very kind of a fascinating study. And you think, you know, women and men in the workplace, women leaders and male leaders, that we are, you know, all equal and, you know, we are all sharing and enjoying the same passion for leadership and so forth. But, well, it's really not necessarily the case. I'm not sure how far we've come in that area. And I'll tell you why, because there was a study that out of Penn State University shows that for women, that just isn't so. That, in fact, being the big kahuna might even give women, you know, people think it gives you more flexibility than your subordinates and all that. Well, in fact, it actually could cause more stress. And researchers based their findings on the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study that questioned more than 2,800 women. And they found that women, in fact, who have high job authority, the ability to hire, fire, and influence others, show more signs of depression than those without that kind of authority. So today on Close Up, you're going to hear from three different people, two women and a man. And they're all entrepreneurs, and we're going to hear their stories about how being the boss or in leadership positions impacted their mental health. So to start with, I'd like you to meet Patty Azar. Hi, Patty.
How are you?
Great, and glad for you to join us. You're soon going to be joining us. You'll be a host on EWN Radio. Your show is called Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome, which is going to air live on Wednesdays at 3 o'clock Eastern. Now, the title of your show, Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome, is something that actually came out of the experience you had as a female leader in the workplace and some of the difficulties you had and you witnessed from other women that you were working with. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your story?
Well, you know, Phyllis, I wish I could say I had not suffered with the good girl syndrome, but I got to tell you, I really have. And it's taken me until this last decade to truly understand why at times I didn't understand my own earned value. And then we work with great leaders out there, and we work with great companies. And when you do that, you also get the opportunity to work with great men and women. But, you know, Phyllis, I saw a single thread that was kind of working as weaving this beautiful blanket of gold out there, all these magnificent women. And most of us, not all of us, but the majority of us, were all really suffering from issues of isolation and issues of depression, issues of loneliness, simply because we did not understand our earned value. And it was real easy for me to go back and to start saying, you know what, these are my issues. And if they're my issues, and I've been out here on my own for almost 25 years, I know there's a way for us to go out there and really help other women. So that's what we brought to market last year, and I'm really, really proud of it.
Well, why do you think that is? I mean, why were you feeling isolated? Here you are working with people, you're surrounded by people. What was it about that experience that caused you to feel that way?
Well, you know, I really have really broken it down to three issues for me. And so this, I think that they may impact all your listeners out there. The first one in that we are really finding for women in the workplace, and then the higher up you go in terms of the corporate ladder or the business ladder, or you decide to go out and be an entrepreneur, is the issue of isolation. Because once you are at the top, you know, a lot of times you don't have the folks to talk to. And, you know, I really do want to be able to lead, and I want to have a business persona, but I'm also very guarded about my privacy. And for all these years, we've been in an organizational expert consultant role and in training and development. So even though we were on the inside of the organization, we were still on the outside. So if I got paid and did what I was supposed to do, we help to develop and nurture and build senior executive teams and a cross-functional leadership team. And what also happens every time that I would start to feel like maybe my value is not being looked upon, maybe they don't see my worth, what happened is that as you bring in strong people, male and female, what happens is that you start to become isolated from the person you work with as a consultant. As a CEO, you may be reporting directly to he or she or to the major decision maker. And over time, as I did my job, I would become replaced. And so if I didn't really understand where my real worth was and where my value was, that started really hitting me in terms of depression and loneliness and wondering then what next, you know, who am I? And I have to tell you, I'm embarrassed to tell you this, it's all self-imposed because there's not one person that ever told me that I was not worthy. There was not one person that ever told me that I didn't have value. And I'm also not the typical woman that goes into business because I don't play like the elite sports. I don't go out. I haven't learned how to play golf, and I don't know how to play tennis. I'm a motorcycle woman, and I love fast, loud cars. And so many times I have put myself in isolation because I haven't had the bridge to do that. But I have to tell you, though, every time that I felt that I was not a part of, I had to come back and say, what is it about me that is feeling this way? And I tell you, 90% it was me, because we have folks in the marketplace that don't really care about Southern women and maybe don't care about short, red-headed women, and they're giving you counsel and advice. But for most of my clients, you know, they're very open. So that's what I did to myself on the part of isolation. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does. But why was it self-imposed? Like, how were you raised a certain way to think that you were not worthy of this position?
Yes. I can't believe it. It's almost like you're looking at my notes, my personal background. I don't fall. I mean, you must have ESP. I don't fall within any stereotypical role between men and women. I've always felt awkward about that. Even being from Atlanta, Georgia, now I proudly proclaim that I'm a Georgia peach. But even when I was a native, and because Atlanta, Georgia is very cosmopolitan, it was really interesting to hear people in terms of what they thought of Southern women and Southern women who have come up through the ranks. And, you know, really, too, when I was young, I married the guy that I thought was going to give me my dreams. Of course, it turned out to be the devil's spawn. And so I was really judged harshly as a single parent. I don't know if you are, but, you know, it was interesting because as a single parent and a woman, I always thought I had to work the hardest. And I was always so surprised when people would say to me, you know, I'm just so surprised that you're so successful because most women like you go straight to poverty. Like, what? And then I've had a non-traditional path with education. And I grew up in the South, and I hate to tell you how old I am, so I'm not going to tell you how old I am. But at that time, it was about my brother. And I don't hold that against my parents, and it was my fault in terms of the choices I made within my life. But the personal background, it's all in my head. If no one ever said, oh, Patty, you know, you're from the South, you've got this Southern twang. But then when I'm in a consultant's role and I'm still a little bit on the outside with those feelings of isolation, and I'm always having to come back and say, look, you are worthy. You are valuable. I don't sell hours. I don't sell time. I am an expert, and I drive major results for organizations where they can make millions, where they can get poised to go to the market at a billion-dollar valuation. But I know if I am suffering from this and that I'm really a smart chick. I am really smart out there, and I'm very loyal. I'm excellent at what I do. But those two factors there have really been something that made me feel lesser than. It many times made me feel as though I was out there in my boat by myself.
Now, you worked with the executives, both men and women. Did you find, for example, that the men, are they trying to convince themselves that they're worthy? You know, like, and where you're having to convince yourself that you're worthy, but in working with both men and women, did you find a disparity between the two, that women were like you?
There were more women like me than not. Now, I'm not going to tell you that every woman is out there, but you know, one thing I do want to say, though, is that, you know, issues of depression and worthiness or not worthiness are, for you know, are not just gender specific. But, you know, but men, you know, I've got a son, and I raised my son. You go out, young man, and you conquer the world. I'm going to give you roots and wings, and quite frankly, I want you to know you have the roots, but I want you to have these bigger wings to fly. And I was never taught that, and so what I was hoping in terms of teaching my son that was that I would give myself permission to do that. But I've always seen a discrepancy about that. I've seen a discrepancy when women are asking for a larger span of control, if they're looking for that promotion, if they're trying to position that business argument out there. And where I see a man just naturally is outside of himself saying, you know, I am worthy, I will ask. And where many women have to go and confer to get support. And unfortunately, a lot of women are driven by consensus, which to me is just death by committee. To get folks to help them to say, look, you are worthy, you have value, it is your time. So I did see those differences out there, but not all the time, because I don't want to paint, I don't want to whitewash or blackwash anything out there, because there are differences.
Sure. You mentioned earlier on that there were three things, isolation. What are the other two?
The second one you just hit on was the personal background. And the third one is my high dominance. I don't know if you can tell or not, but I like to be in charge. And I love it when I'm driving results. And my clients love it when I drive results, because we really go for the challenging client, the disruptive client, the one that says, you know what, we've never done this before, or it's been done, and we want a challenge to marketplace. And so our business model supports that, no matter if you're female or male. But the balance that I've had and some of the feedback that I get, and I know this really hits my value, is when I have people telling me that I'm out of balance, I'm being too aggressive or versus assertive. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, women and myself, we're always having to negotiate those words. And I have found for every decade that I have lived, that understanding words, understanding their meaning, and especially how you show up in terms of business, so critical. Because if I show up aggressive, and there are times I feel like I need to take an aggressive stance because it's too risky, it's absolutely the wrong thing to do, and I've got the data behind me to build the business argument. And other times when I feel as though I can bring in my extroversion, I can bring in my social skills and say, let me help coach you through this. Let me help counsel you through this. Because my self-esteem, and when I'm really concerned about losing my value and my worth, is when I have to take a real stand, because high-dominant women sometimes really get a bad rap in the marketplace. And I know, because I've lived it, I wouldn't want to change that about me. But what I've had to realize is that it's about how I deliver the message. But, you know, I get people that fall out of love with me when I make a real argument against consensus, especially for women, because women love consensus because it's bringing a committee together and people feel good. But consensus is death to an organization. And when I make an argument when I go against others and their, quote, their gut decisions, and then, you know, I don't know, I'm sure this has happened to you too, when you've had to go up against one of the team superstars and you've got the information. So I have felt the isolation being on the outside, and I have to be sure my personal background, the little girl doesn't say, now look, you are worthy, I'm not worthy, yes, you are worthy, I'm not worthy, where your heart and your head are fighting. And then also with the high dominance, it's like, you know what? I have to keep that in check, because if you've got me on your team, you've got a winner. You've got somebody that can take the hill and help drive that success. However, what serves you so well is sometimes really can kick your earned value and how you feel about yourself, which, again, here we go back to the circle, results in isolation or the feeling of it.
Now, Patty, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Janelle McCauley, and she herself has experienced depression, for a different reason, but still had expectations as a business owner to, you know, plow through in spite of something that was a very painful experience that she had. So stand by. We'll come back right after the short break.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
You're listening to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
Okay, this is Phyllis Smith, and we have just completed a very really interesting, compelling discussion with Patty Azar about her experience in leadership role and how there really is this kind of two-sided thing. In fact, this we're referencing a recent research that came out of Penn State University, and which shows that women with job authority face something called double bind. They are expected to be nurturing, caring, agreeable, yet they're also expected to be assertive and authoritative. They found that in this research that women are often viewed as lacking assertiveness and confidence associated with strong leaders, and all of this can lead to stress. Now, it doesn't mean men in leadership roles don't experience stress, but many for different reasons. So, in this case, right now, I'm bringing in Janelle McCauley. She is also another EWN radio host of Eat Great, Live Well, which airs live on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Now, Janelle, you suffered from depression, and it was for a different reason. You had a tragedy. You lost your mother. She was your best friend. And it had a profound effect on you, but you still were expected to manage a business and be strong and plow through. So explain what that was like for you, and were the expectations different for you than it was, let's say, for someone else? Or maybe I think your husband, he's also in business with you. You had children to raise. Were the expectations different?
I think that the expectations are different, and I love this conversation because about 5 years ago when I lost my mom very suddenly, I was in my early 50s, I had a great corporate job, I thought I had everything all planned out, and as I was listening to you and Patty talk in the first segment, it was interesting because in my corporate job, I was a supervisor, I trained people, I problem solved, I did, you know, more than what was expected of me, and I did it very well, yet I was up and competing against all of the real young, just out of college with no experience, who of course had all the answers, they knew everything. And it was really interesting because the harder I tried, the more frustrated and depressed I got when I was doing that, because they just, you know, they don't know the information, they don't have the answers, but they think they do because they've got the education. And, you know, so what happened for me is when my mom passed away, that was a time when I finally just took a step back and said, okay, what am I doing and why am I doing it? I'm working really hard, but I'm not being acknowledged. For me, when I was in the corporate world, people told me, you know, when I'd say something to them, I was coaching them, they really got it. And they say, that's what my mom would say to me. And yet, you know, when I would get strong and assertive, like the men would do, and I was in the finance industry, so it's very male-dominated, people would say, wait a minute, you know, that just doesn't fit your personality. You're supposed to be, you know, matronly, motherly. You know, you're supposed to take care of us. You're not supposed to be aggressive. So there was a real conundrum in how I was supposed to act and what I was supposed to do. It seemed like no matter what I did, they always wanted me to be the other, and I could never figure out which one to be at which time.
Yeah. So you were kind of at a crossroads and sort of in the middle, finding your way, feeling isolated like Patty.
I was. And then when my mom passed away very suddenly, you know, I was 53 years old at the time. And, you know, I said, okay, why am I doing this? What am I doing? And I had the opportunity to step, I'd been an entrepreneur earlier in my life, and I had the opportunity to step in and take over a business my parents started 30 years ago. And, you know, it just felt right. I felt if I was going to do something, I was going to do it on my own. And I'm the oldest of 9 children, and we're all within 10 and a half years. So all of a sudden, once she was gone, you know, my siblings looked at me, everybody was looking at me and saying, okay, you know, who does what? My kids were grown, and I had a grandchild. And from the outside, everything looked perfect in my life. But on the inside, I just had no, I didn't know how to take care of myself. I didn't know what I was supposed to do next. So I went through a real time where I just really went inside and was just very quiet, just didn't want to do anything because nothing seemed to make any sense.
So were the expectations for you then, you went inside yourself, but were people, now you're in your own business, were your family, were they all expecting something different from you? I mean, were you able to do that?
Well, it was interesting because at a time like that, when you're going through a transition, everyone's got an opinion of what it should be like, yet no one wants to do the work and no one wants to help, but they sure got an opinion. So what I had to do was really learn to trust myself. For so many years, say growing up as the oldest child, working, all my life I'd been taking care of people, and what I did was I always did what everyone else wanted me to do. And for the first time in my life, I had to take a step back and say, okay, how do I take care of myself, and what do I want and need? And I think as women, we tend to nurture, we tend to take care of people, we tend to make sure their needs are met. And, you know, I've had this conversation with a lot of women. They're not even sure how to take care of themselves. And I had to learn how to do that for the first time in my early 50s. And it was a challenge because I didn't even know what I wanted.
Yeah. And so where are you now? How are you coping now 5 years later?
You know, it was really interesting because once I just decided, okay, I am a smart woman. I had, you know, a master's degree. I had good education. I had street smarts. I was raised to be a good worker. Once I took a step back and really realized I had a voice and I really had a lot to offer, I started to trust myself. Once I started to do that and, you know, really respect my decisions and my choices, it was interesting because doors started to open. People came into my life. The right people were there exactly when I needed them. That's how I got to eWomen Network. That's how I've made some amazing connections, business, friendship, just got opportunities to do things that I never, ever in a million years, if somebody would have told me I'd be doing the things today that, you know, that I'm doing, I would have thought they were crazy because I didn't think it was possible. But like Patty said, what I realized is I was my own limiting force. I was holding myself back because if I didn't believe in myself, why would anyone else? And it was once I started to believe in myself, once I really started to value my opinions, my life totally transformed.
Interesting. Patty, you're still on? You're still there, right?
Of course.
Yeah, so you see connections here between, you're seeing connections here between you and Janelle, that both of you doubted yourself, and now Janelle, once she stopped doubting herself, she started developing that confidence, and things just started, doors started opening, things started to happen for her. What about you? How, you know, you had a successful business, but now you're starting to launch another one, which is helping women really find their voice and their confidence, breaking the good girl syndrome. So how do you do that? How does one do what Janelle did?
I love Janelle because I love her honesty, because she's telling us the gut-wrenching truth. And that's what we see so very often for women out here. Because if I ran the science, a profile for Janelle, I have a feeling it would tell me that everything about her is about having value in her life, value with the team, value with herself, value with her God, value with her community, value with her family, and which has been magnificent. But however, there was no value or anything left for Janelle. Do you think that's about right, Janelle?
Absolutely.
And so breaking the good girl syndrome is saying, you know, we all have 100% of our lives. We can't say, oh, I'm going to give the 110 or the 120%. We only have the 100%. So I really admire Janelle for what she is saying, because if you believe that your life is about being able to serve and support and to give value, that is not negative. That is not a caste system. What happens is that there's nothing left. And so what Janelle did is what we love to see that women do, and then quite frankly men too, are to say, wait a minute, I'm missing in this equation. I'm going to look at 100% of my life, and guess what? The value to me is that I am worthy, and if I am worthy, I'm going to start aligning myself with people so I can build a skill of confidence. And that's one of the reasons that we started looking at the good girl, because Janelle has been the good girl her whole life. And there's nothing wrong about being the good girl until you have no value for yourself. You're a rock star, Janelle.
Thank you. You know, I what I've learned, which is really interesting, and I hear women do it all the time. I mean, I was a master storyteller. I could justify anything that happened and why it didn't happen to me. And I hear women do that so much today. And I've really committed to, you know, in a conversation, stopping it and really getting people to pay attention to the words they use, because we don't realize that those words we're using really drive the results. And the more I take care of myself, and it sounds selfish, but it's really not, because the I fill my tank, that means I can give so much more to other people when I do that. And I think we tend to forget that.
And Janelle, you also, your business, Vitarobics, that's all about helping people get healthy nutritionally, so from the inside out. So really, your role now is about taking care of yourself and other people. You've already taken care of other people, but now this is on a bigger scale. I mean, on a scale that doesn't start from the outside, but starts from the inside.
It really does. With stress and everything we do, all the decisions we make, it really is about taking care of ourselves. So it's kind of ironic that that's what I'm doing today.
Mm-hmm.
Phyllis, this is Patty. May I add something to that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what Janelle, she just said one of the greatest words out there that is really a value killer for women is that quote, I'm actually going to be selfish. If you look up the definition of selfish, it really is not negative. If you think about yourself on a plane and you have children with you and if something happens, they say the airbag drops, you put it on yourself before you put it on your child. That is being selfish. That's making sure that you're in good shape so you can take care of folks. And that's a word that's been so detrimental to women and that have kept us depressed. And because if you want the negative connotation of selfish, it's about being self-centered. And there are not that many self-centered women out there. Most of us are selfish, meaning we leave ourselves out. So thank you for bringing that up now and letting me join in on that.
All right, we're going to take a short break, ladies. When we come back, we got a dude on who is going to talk to us about what it's like being a man in a position of power and what impact it's had on him and what he sees and has seen in his life in working with women. So stand by. We'll be back right after the short break.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Henderson, host of eWomen Radio Network's Idea Success with Sylvia. Listen live Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to get your ideas, dreams, goals, and plans out of your head and into action for profit and purpose. I'll interview people who've taken their ideas and made them reality, uncovering successes, challenges, and the lessons they've learned in the process. We'll hear from experts who help you get unstuck and be in action as you or your team put your ideas in motion. I'll share insights on the systems I use with my clients to get things done in business and life. Join me Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern or later at EWNRadioNetwork.com. I am bursting at the seams to share great ideas, introduce you to amazing people, and to be your catalyst for turning your dreams into dollars and your ideas into income and impact. That's Idea Success with Sylvia, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with your host, Phyllis Smith.
And we are back again, second half of the show. We've been talking with two fabulous ladies, Patty Azar. She is an EWN radio host, and her show is called Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome that will be airing on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. And then Janelle McCauley, she's also an EWN radio network host. Her show Eat Great, Live Well airs on Thursday evenings at 7 Eastern. And so now it's time to bring the male perspective. So researchers at, we've been talking about this research that shows that women in leadership positions or authoritative positions tend to be more stressed and even suffer from depression. Patty talked about the isolation syndrome. Janelle talked about, that women, she wasn't sure when she was in the workplace whether or not she should be assertive or not, or, they thought the men she worked with thought she should be, she should be more mothering, and yet, she was supposed to be in a position of, authority and should be more assertive. So it's kind of this conundrum of how to behave, and ultimately what both Janelle and Patty say is that you gotta just believe in yourself and be who you are and have the confidence and know that you you're worthy, that you have value. Steve Kidd, he's gonna come in here in a second. But let's just go back to the research at Penn State. They also found that male leaders have the highest level of life satisfaction. And again, in this research, it was based on data from at a Wisconsin interviewed over 2,800 women. Whereas women leaders in general have life satisfaction that's about equal to that of women with supposedly lower status occupations, or even women who don't work outside the home at all. So there's a real disparity there. Steve Kidd, you're a host, EWN radio host of Thriving Entrepreneurs. Your show airs on Tuesdays at 12 Eastern. So as a man and a business owner, do you concur with these findings? Do you see a disparity between male men and women leaders, and who regards their life at satisfaction?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, I think there's just so many things, but I think it really boils down to the stereotypes that we start out young children on. The cover girl model, if you will, for a woman isn't a powerful businesswoman, whereas very often for a guy, you know, it's somebody that has been successful, whether that be a successful athlete or a you know, a corporate person like Bill Gates or somebody like that. The role models that we feed to the little children, we start off giving them a disparity, and I think it kind of goes from there.
What about your personal experience? What were expectations for you as you were growing up?
I grew up in a little bit weirder of a situation because I come from a pastor's home. So I was raised in one of those situations where you're just never quite good enough because everybody in the whole church looks to the pastor and their family as the epitome of what perfection is. And in truth, none of us, you know, are really perfect. We all have our flaws and stuff, and it becomes difficult in that situation to have everybody around you evaluating your whole life. So it's a little bit different than the average, but I think the biggest thing as a guy that we use as an advantage is our competitive drive. You know, it even shows up in driving. You know, guys like to be the first one to get to a place and things like that. And that competitive nature, I think, helps us go forward in business sometimes without even really thinking about it, as opposed to evaluating what the world comes around us. And I think it's years later in a guy that they tend to look back and evaluate, well, what's the significance of my life? What have I really done? And they either do well with that, or all too stereotypically often, guys end up going through midlife crises rather than feeling depressed when they reach that level. They have that level of success, and then later on they turn around and question it all. So it's kind of different the way they both approach it.
Well, I think interesting, growing up in a pastor's home, there were expectations for you, but did it drive you away and into despair, or did it make you work harder and strive for the success that you're talking about, to be in charge? I mean, you've been an entrepreneur for most of your life. So I think you said you started at age 5. So, right? So did that have something to do with being a pastor's son?
I think just between myself and my brothers, you can see both sides of that equation. I was very driven to succeed and, you know, to have a business. And I really liked being out there and being a business owner and those kind of things. Whereas I have another brother who has struggled his whole life with addictions of one sort or another, because of that pressure. And I looked to it as a benefit in my life, but it was really interesting to see that the same things that I had been telling people were things that helped me succeed better are the same exact things that in his story were the reasons why he was having the struggles he was having.
I find that so fascinating how people can grow up in the same household. Children can grow up in the same household, and boy, they have completely different roads that they take. And it's so interesting to find, you know, why would you take one road and he would take another? And he had a drug addiction. Was work an addiction, a sort of addiction for you?
To some extent, yeah. I mean, I suppose you could even say that still is. There's an old saying that says, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And I adopted that maybe too early in life. even back in high school, I used to tell my parents, whereas my brothers would have like paper routes and stuff like that, I would tell them, you know, I really want to focus in on whether it was, drama or my education or those kind of things. I really want to focus on this while I have this opportunity so that I can then later do those things. And that was how it came apart on me. I was really able to really enjoy that element of things.
So So then are you happy with your life? This research says that male leaders have the highest level of life satisfaction. Male leaders, you are an entrepreneur, you're the boss, you're the big kahuna. Does that give you satisfaction? I think that for women, satisfaction comes in more than one form. But for men, something like that being in a leadership role, you know, that might be it for them. Is that it for you?
Yeah, I mean, as a guy, I think we tend to look at how does the world label us, and if the world is perceiving us as doing well, as being successful, we're willing to accept that. I see even in my own wife, who is my partner in my business, and so every success that I've had is hers too, she will struggle with how she perceives herself. And we can be in the same situation, and I'll be like, wow, wasn't that amazing? And she'll be like, what do you think people were thinking about when I did such and such? And do you think it really came across okay? It's really interesting to see how the two of us can go through the same exact great moment and come out in two completely different places often.
Steve, this is Janelle.
Yeah.
As you were talking, I was really thinking about how I've had something very similar happen with my husband and I. We've been married, I don't know, 37, 38 years, long time. And, you know, when we go through a situation, we both respond to it so differently. You'd think we had a whole different experience.
I mean, I'm seeing that you had a different kind of stress, that there was an expectation that you got. You were a pastor's son. Your expectations were that you had to, you know, be not, it's interesting, as a pastor's son, not just, you had to work for yourself. I mean, you wanted to be in charge. You wanted, you know, you didn't, you know, have you ever worked for somebody else, or has it always been you, the big kahuna?
Oh, no, I've worked for several different people. In fact, some of the greatest joys in my life have been the times when I've been essentially the second in command for a couple of really wonderful people. One of which actually was probably the best example of a woman in leadership that I've ever actually personally dealt with.
And what made that experience and what made her special for you?
You know, the biggest thing that I saw, we were talking about it, is that she just really embraced who she was. All too often as people, we tend to buy into if we're a leader, we have to be X. We have to be authoritative or, you know, whatever. And she really just embraced, this is who I am and this is what I'm really good at. And then she brought that to the table. The most amazing thing she did was she was an expert at eliminating blame from a situation. She would just come right in and say, the fish always stinks from the head down, so therefore I am completely to blame for whatever's gone wrong in here. Now what do we need to do to solve it? And it was so disarming that it just always worked.
Right. The buck stops here. So,
yeah.
Patty, in your experience then in working with executives and building executive teams and so forth, do you find that women are more apt to take the blame than men?
Yes, and my stomach fell and my heart hurt when Steve gave that example. Now, I know from Steve's perspective that was a magnificent example because she released all drama. She got that was probably her way of getting back to data, to evidence, and saying, okay, I'm in charge here, the buck stops here, and so where did I fail, and then let's move forward. However, that is also part of the good girl syndrome. There's a YouTube video out, and you see women, and it's going, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And at times, there's no reason even to be saying that. And so part of the good girl syndrome is we take the blame even when the blame is not ours, because one of the greatest things we lack when we don't understand our value, we do not understand confidence. Now, the American culture says that confidence is all innate, and it is not. We all have a sliver or an indice of confidence within our natural behavior. And if you run any type of really good systems, it will show you where your confidence lies, exactly what Steve said and his leader said, that you exploit the strengths and you never put any time, effort, or money against something that's, quote, perceived a weakness. But for women not to say, when we lack confidence, we will too easily take the blame, where blame sometimes we should not take. And that's part of us not understanding how to build the skill of confidence to be able to communicate correctly, because you can tell folks that you can get feedback, whether it's good or bad, and to hold people accountable when it is their fault. And you can do that in such a way where for men it's not emasculating, and for women you didn't just tell them that they're the worthless piece of anything in the world. So I love the fact when people take their ownership. But there's a point where you take ownership, even if the fish sinks from the head to the tail. We still have to understand where the decisions were, where the trigger points are, where the kinks in the chain are in the thinking. And if you're in business, unless it's egregious, unless it's moral, ethical, or illegal, it's not about blame anyway. It truly should be about feedback and continuous improvement and where we're going to correct. That's one thing that if I could get through to women in terms of, if you understand confidence and you communicate and you can communicate a business argument, what happens is that immediately the woman gets the uptick in value, the organization gets the uptick in value, and the organization gets an uptick in performance and innovation. But I get what Steve is saying, though, and I really appreciated the fact that he talked about strengths, because that's how I lead. And that's what we do with organizations. It's about aligning strengths. I just don't believe God gave us weaknesses. If you have children and the first time you hold your baby and you look at that child and say, oh, my gosh, this child is perfect. Look at the strengths and the weaknesses. You never do that. It's just when we start to raise our kids and we put them in schools and when they get around their friends and we get around churches, everybody tells you what you should have, could have, would have been. Then by the time you get to the business, you wonder, oh my gosh, who am I? Why am I? How do I show up? So,
that's a great perspective.
And it's not negative. We've been taught to do that, and we're so brilliant. We're so great at what we do. We're masters at being able to adjust to any situation. So, I would love to know that leader, because she probably rocks, and her people probably love her.
Yeah, and I'll say that I think that's an interesting perspective, Janelle. Don't you think that when a child is born, we don't look and go, oh, what are the strengths and weaknesses? The weaknesses are developed over time because of expectations.
I absolutely agree. And I was, as Patty was talking, I was thinking, you know, when I was raised, my mom, and she always did it so that I turn out to be strong, but she always told me what I didn't do well versus praising what I did do well. So it made me focus on more of what I wasn't doing, and I think that's where I got in my head and got caught up. And I've had to make that shift, because it's hard for us to break that cycle of what we were taught. And for me to shift and be able to praise people for what they're doing, you know, and not just pointing out what needs to be done better, to finding that balance, because I think that's hard for women to do, because we tend to look at what we haven't done way more than we look at what we have done.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too. Steve, you any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest things that I would love to see, and I love seeing it when it does happen, is when a woman just really embraces who she is, and rather than buying into a who am I supposed to be, she just brings her best self. Such amazing things happen, whether that be in a boardroom or in a business or whatever, when a woman just says, this is what I'm really good at, and really emphasizes that, and then takes the ball and runs with it, rather than having to have to try to be great at something that maybe isn't their strength, or because they're supposed to.
You know, it's interesting, because I think that there might be some perspective, a cultural perspective here. Now, Patty, you alluded to it earlier about, you know, being from in Georgia, from the South, women were had different their different expectations for women. I'm from New York. I grew up, I worked in New York City, worked in television network news, and if you were not aggressive, I mean, there was no, you know, hey, how are you? This was, we have a deadline, get it done. And so women, actually, there was a real equality with men and women in that environment. And also being in New York City and growing up in New York, I even talked to people before. I mean, I've been in Texas 23 years, but I know that for a long time ago, I went and when I was at home and I was working part-time and a friend of mine just sort of hired me to help her kind of answer phones. And she had, I was answering phones and I would just say, the way I answered it was just not gentle enough. It wasn't warm and friendly and fuzzy enough. But the way I was, it was so different than when I was raised. So would you say, going back to you, Patty, that there is also a cultural difference between men and women?
Yes. Can I give you a laugh?
Oh, geographical. I'm really saying not cultural, geographical.
Absolutely. I have to give you a laugh. So when I was with Federal Express and I was in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was number one in the sales role and the account development role, and my boss sat down one day and said this to me, quote, "You know, you would be very successful in New York." And I thought, and you know what that did? I hit the bottom because I thought he was telling me that I was an awful person. And it hit my value, and I said, "You think I'm a nasty woman or something?" Because that was my ignorance. I was a young woman. And he said, No, because you're direct and you have the confidence and you know how to build the business argument and you know how to close business, you'd be successful anywhere. And it was so funny because of how you hear it on your ears. And now it's like, I love being like those people in New York because they know how to get things done. And it really is. It's geographical. You're right about cultural. And what's really interesting is that the biggest cultural issue is between men and women and how we've co-created that, no matter what geographic or culture, because the culture studies we've been reviewing and that we've got the research on showing the same issues between men and women all over the world.
Yeah. All right, listen, Janelle, you have any last comment here regarding women and words of advice for women who might be feeling stressed or depressed or isolated in any way before we wrap up?
Well, I like what Steve had just said about just really be who you are. What I did is I tried to be who I thought everyone wanted me to be, and it wasn't until I finally said, okay, I'm done with that. I'm going to be who I am and really be authentic and be myself. That's when I was able to kind of get up and move forward and get things done and actually feel really good about it. And what I did by doing that is I attracted the right kind of people around me, people who believed in things I did. When you're trying to be someone you're not attracting the right people to you, whether it's, you know, someone for a partnership or someone to work with or friends, because they're not attracted to the real authentic you. So, now, my advice to people is just be yourself and don't worry about who comes around, because the right people will show up. I can guarantee that.
Steve, last words of wisdom?
I would tag right on top of that. The on top of being yourself is understand that you are uniquely brilliant exactly the way you are. You were made to be you. We need you in the world. We don't need a clone of Bill Gates or anybody else. We need who you are to really show up, and that's what will really take your life, your business, to the next level.
Patty, and final words from you.
find a sponsor, just like Steve was saying earlier about community. For female leadership, find a male sponsor and a female sponsor. Those that you have not been able to achieve the status, the rank, the money, or the span of control to get intellectually honest feedback and for them to see your earned value. And in doing so, own your own earned value and be at peace with your own decisions, because it can't take away your birthday.
Beautiful. Thank you all so much, Patty Azar, Stephen Kidd, Jonelle McCauley. Thank you so much. And check out EWNRadioNetwork.com to find out when their shows air. You can listen to them live or, of course, on demand. Thank you so much, all of you, for your words of wisdom and sharing your stories.